أعوذ بالله من الشيطان العين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، وبه نستعين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. So just before the break, I was actually mentioned a few things about the rights of men and women. And what I'll do is I'll just be very brief and hopefully encourage you to watch the talks that I'm giving for this Muharram, because I am speaking about the Rasalat al-Huquq of Imam Zain al-Abidin, the Treaties of Rights. And within that Treaties of Rights, Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi afdhalus salam, he covers the, at least some of the rights of husband and wife. Among these rights, and I would say perhaps the most important right of the wife over the husband, as Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he points out in the Quran, الرجال قوامون بالنساء. And that is, the wife, she has a right to be taken care of, supported, and that statement within the Quran, that the men قوامون على النساء, which means that men, they have a responsibility, have an obligation, that they have authority over women. Quite often, it is misunderstood, meaning that, okay, they have this absolute authority over women. However, when we look at the commentary of our fuqaha, our scholars, our jurists, they explain that what this concept of قوامون على النساء means, and it means that they have responsibility, and particularly also, as the ayat mentions, that they have a financial responsibility towards their right, their wives. So meaning that that right is for the women over their husband, to be taken care of, to have food, clothing, and shelter, to be maintained, at least also to the extent that they were maintained before they got married. And this means that if the wife was of a particular status, financial status, before she got married, it is the responsibility of the man to maintain her at that particular financial status. Unless, of course, the woman herself, she agrees that, okay, well, I don't want to, or the man doesn't have to maintain me at that particular financial status. Why? Because I'm going to get married, because the guy is mutadayyin, and whatever he can do, then that's fine. But that verse obligates the men to take care of their wives at that particular status. And it's mentioned in the books of jurisprudence, the books of fiqh. One of the rights of the man over his wife is, again, based on that concept of that the men are قوامون على النساء, is that the wife is, she observes listening to the husband based on, of course, his guidance, guiding her within the aspects of religion, aspects of Islam. Because, of course, if the husband goes outside of the bounds of the Sharia, then there's no obligation for him, for the woman, to listen to the husband. For example, if he tries to get her to do something haram, and also vice versa. And so there's, again, touching back on that point, and I'll keep, you know, emphasizing that point, that the concept of kufr, that if either of the spouses are doing something where they're disobeying Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and it will create disobedience for the other spouse, then those rights that they want that each one has, whether it be the rights of the woman to be taken care of, these things then are modified, that, you know, if the woman is not you know, following the guidance of her husband, the correct and sound and just guidance of her husband, then he would no longer be obligated to fulfill all of those duties of, okay, well, I'm going to have to give you this or maintain you at this particular status. Why? Because she's going outside of the bounds of his rights. She's not observing his rights. And likewise, if the husband is not observing the rights of his wife by taking care of her, maintaining her, you know, unfortunately, God forbid, sometimes this happens that, you know, there may be a conflict between a husband and wife, and the guy, he stops supporting her financially. And at that point, she no longer has to observe the rights of the husband. That if he says, okay, well, you have to stay at home. If she needs to go out to work to take care of herself because the man won't take care of herself, then that's fine. So these are just a few of the rights of the between husband and wife. Some of these I will elaborate more on throughout my talks in the month of Muharram at the Zainabiyya Center, because we're going over Salat al-Hukuk, Fimam Zain al-Abidin, Treaties of Rights. And I advise all of you to read the Treaties of Rights. This Treaties of Rights is online. So you can read it there. Read the different rights in the section of nikah, of marriage, of the fuqaha. And it is very important that husband and wife, they understand their rights and their responsibilities. And I'm saying this and I emphasize this because quite often when I have done some marriage counseling between a husband and wife that have contemplated divorce, and unfortunately some who have gotten divorce because they came at the last moment, and it's a very unfortunate thing that some people, they think that, okay, well, we want to hide, okay, we have problems, and they'll come at the last minute when there's almost no chance of reconciliation between the husband and wife. Quite often what I've observed is that there was a lack of understanding between the husband and wife about exactly what were their rights and responsibility to one another. But had they understood this maybe prior to getting married or after getting married, and they sat down and they discussed what these rights are, what the rights each one have, and sometimes, you know, as we stated, there are certain rights that a person may have, but they may decide, okay, well, we're going to overlook that right. For example, a woman says, okay, well, you have to maintain me at the same status that I was before I get married. But she decides that, well, you know what, because of certain situation, you know, the economy today, because of perhaps the person himself, that maybe he doesn't have the ability to maintain her at a very high financial status, but nonetheless he will be able to take care of her, take care of the family. And so she decides, okay, well, I don't want to, you know, my father, he has a mansion, but if we live in a two-story house, that's fine. You don't have to get a mansion. You don't have to have all of these amenities. And she agrees with that, then that's fine. So that's a case where she overlooked her rights for, I guess, the betterment of her situation. Or like sometimes, quite often, a man, he foregoes his rights at times that, you know, he gives the wife permission that, okay, well, you have the permission to divorce. You have the wakalat of divorce that you can also enact if anything goes awry. So these are cases where, you know, a person has a right, but he or she gives up that right in order to, I guess, in order to create a greater harmony, or what they feel may be a greater harmony between the husband and wife. So knowing those rights, knowing that, okay, well, what rights maybe I've given up or haven't given up, often helps to create a strong family tie between husband and wife. And often it will help those situations that usually become rocky, that if you know your rights, the husband knows his rights over the wife knows her husband rights over the husband, then it will help in those situations. So again, I encourage you to read the Risalat al-Hukuk. And also find out what one's rights are by reading the Khaldun and Masal. And with that, I'll just open it up for more question and answers so it can be interactive. The questions about the possibility of the wilayat of the father being lost over the daughter. If, for example, he encourages the daughter to marry someone who is not a believer, who may cause the daughter to go astray, versus marrying someone who will help safeguard her deen. In that case, if, it's the same thing. Pretty much the same thing. That if the guy is viable religiously, he's a kuf. Again, it goes back, he's a kuf. He is compatible religiously with the daughter, but the family objects. And in that situation also, the father will lose the wilayah, not just if the person is not Muslim or if he's irreligious, but also in the case that someone who is religious, someone who is capable of protecting the daughter's deen, her faith. And if that wilayah is lost by the father, what happens is that the paternal grandfather, if he's alive, then he has the wilayat. He has the responsibility to ensure that the daughter is married to someone who will protect her deen. If the grandfather is not alive, then she basically has that decision that she can make on her own. The wilayat does not go to the brother, nor does it go to the mother. Again, that's black and white Sharia. Of course, if, observing the etiquettes of the law, that yes, if the brother is looking out for the best interests of his sister and he sees that, okay, well, yeah, this guy is good, it is only wise to listen to good judgment. And at that point, it becomes the responsibility of every mu'min, as I've explained before, that the مؤمنين والمؤمنين والمؤمنات بعضهم أولياء بعض يأمرون بالمعروف وينهون عن المنكر. That it becomes the responsibility of every mu'min to express their wilayat for one another, their guardianship over one another, by giving the most sound advice to the sister or even to another brother with regards to making the best choice of marriage. But yes, the father will lose the wilayat if he tries to marry his daughter to someone who's going to lead her astray, or even if he objects to her marrying someone who is proper and is a match for her, wilayat would go to the grandfather. If the grandfather's not alive, then she has the right to make her own choice. But of course, again, listening to sound advice. Everyone should listen to sound advice. Hopefully that answers your question. Questions about the about if spouses, they get into arguments, they get into a fight, disagreement, and they become very emotional. When is it best to kind of deal with this situation? The best thing is to do is to wait until both calm down and they're a little bit less emotional and they can be rational about the situation so that they will observe one another's rights. Because often in the times of emotion, if someone's very emotional, they're not really going to think through the choices or make the proper choice. This is also why they're within the recommendation of the Prophet, says if you're angry, just sit down so you can calm down. And if you continue to be angry while you're sitting down, it says lay down. Because by doing that, you will hopefully be able to, become calm and become more rational, to think about what is the best choice and how best to go forward. So that's definitely, the two should wait and become calm. So what is the question is about the protocols or the...
Yeah, protocols
about the woman being a virgin and the man not being a virgin. And
just clarify what Islam says about the matter.
Okay, clarify what Islam says about the matter of the, about virginity and marriage to a virgin. Well, again, the asas, the foundation of Islam and the Islamic principle and institution of marriage, again, it goes back to that concept of one's faith. That the most important thing is a person's faith. If that person was married before or not married, these are circumstances or social circumstances which you know may apply or not apply certain legal matters. For example, if the girl is a virgin, then based on Islamic law, she's going to need her father's permission in order to get married. And simply because, you know, within the system of, or the institution of marriage and the philosophy is that the father should be looking out for the best interests of the girl, that she is marrying someone who is going to take care of her, marrying someone that is going to observe the rights of the woman. And supposedly, and hopefully that is the case, the father, when he's looking out for the best interests of the girl in that case, he understands that, you know, hey, he's a guy, he grew up as a male, he knows sometimes how maybe men think, he knows that sometimes in our youth we are, you know, perhaps just kind of, you know, wanting to, you know, not ready for responsibility. It's done. Women, they usually mature faster than men. So quite often the father, if he's a good judge, he can judge that. Okay, yeah, this guy is mature. He's at the point that he will observe the rights of the wife, observe the rights of my daughter if they get married. Or he may see the guy and say, okay, well, you know, it's a good guy. He needs a little bit maturing. I'm not going to deny a marriage, but also try to be good inspiration for him to become mature to take on that responsibility. So this is why, like at least with regards to the woman, that if she's a virgin, she may not have that experience of dealing with guys, that the father should look out for her and protect her best interests, or the grandfather. Or again, if they're, like we spoke before, if they lose their waliyat, then yes, she has a right to make her own decision, but again, protocols will say that, listen, anybody, if you're going to make a decision as a big decision like that, you should listen to reason. And this is why also a woman who has been married before, at that point, because she has the experience, she's been married, she's dealt with a husband, dealt with and saw how, okay, well, maybe certain men operate this and that. She doesn't need the permission of her parents. She doesn't need the permission of her father, simply because she has the experience now. And therefore, she should make her own decision. Again, that doesn't mean that she shouldn't listen to good reasoning. If someone says, hey, you know what, I know this guy, he's not going to be good for you because of this and that. She still has to make her own decision, but you listen to good judgment. Or, hey, here's a good guy that maybe you two will get along, you're compatible, and, you know, go for getting married. On the case of the man, whether he's a virgin or not, the Sharia really doesn't hold that much emphasis that, okay, you know, he has to absolutely listen to the father, that he will not be able to get married if the father doesn't agree to it. Nonetheless, again, one must observe the etiquettes of the law as far as listen to good advice, taking the advice of one's father, one's elder, on how to prepare for marriage, on how to obtain the maturity for marriage, and all of those things. So hopefully that answered the question about the concept of virgin.
Also, just if you could make a point about age difference, and if that even makes it matters or not.
Okay, and age difference, really, you know, it's a good question. Age difference, again, based on law, it doesn't really make a difference. You know, there's it's possible that there can be various ages, that the man is older than the woman, or the woman's older than the man. And we see this in the Sunnah of the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt. Even the idea of whether, like, who's a virgin, who's not a virgin, we see this also again in the Sunnah of the Prophet. You know, most of the wives of the Prophets, they were divorcees or widowed. All those things we see in the Sunnah of the Ahlul Bayt. Questions about the rights of the woman in terms of her emotional needs, because we spoke a little bit about the rights of the wife to be maintained. The Prophet gave emphasis on that. The Quran gave emphasis on that, that the woman should be taken care of, food, clothing, shelter. With regards to emotional needs, there is a hadith from Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, wherein he alludes and he says the he says حَقُّ زَوْجَتِكْ أَن تَقُولَ لَهَا أَنَا أُحِبَّكَ. So he says the rights of your wife over you, over the man, is that he must tell his wife that he loves her. And this in itself, it is a it's a great responsibility, because actually the hadith wherein this is narrated, one of the companions, he comes to the Prophet and he asks Prophet, he says, what is my wife's right over me? He says, and تقول أن أحبك. Then he asks again, he says, okay, yeah, so what is my wife's right over me? He says, and تقول أن أحبك. And he says it three times. Meaning that, you know, the Institute of Marriage, it also, you know, observes that emotional rights over that the woman has over the man. That, you know, it's not just something mechanical. Okay, well, you know, I go out to work, I come back, make sure that, you know, we have a place to stay, make sure the lights are on, make sure there's food in the house. Okay, inshallah, you cook. No, it's also to fulfill that emotional need that women have. And quite often, I don't know a woman who doesn't like for her husband to say that, hey, you know, I love you, I care for you, and shows that he is affectionate towards the wife. Men also need that too. Sometimes men are a little bit, you know, we'll be a little bit more kind of standoffish about it, to say, okay, yeah, I'm macho. But yes, men also need that affectionate and that that love. So. It's something that's natural. That's a good question. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a very good question, and definitely I commend you as a brother, as a male, to ask this question, because mostly women ask that question. But it's good that someone has that awareness. And the question is about the role and responsibility of men in the home. That as you've read, that Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, while he was a khalifa, he still Imam Ali, he continued to help in the homes. He helped Fatima to Zahra salam alayha in the home. He would often go to the homes of some of the widows who their husband had died in battle, some of the battles he led, and he would go in, he would take firewood, he would start the fire, he would, you know, bring water. So he helped out in their homes. And this is something that, yes, it's definitely, it's beneficial that as men that we help the women out in their homes, be appreciative of their, you know, their work, because quite often the women, they do this. Sometimes, you know, one may not even ask your wife to do it, but they do it. And they take on that responsibility. And based on the Sharia, it's not really their responsibility. It's not an obligation. Unfortunately, sometimes it's become a cultural habit. Some individuals think, oh, this is an obligation. Well, when I go out to work, I come back home, my wife should have the food ready for me. And if she doesn't, and I'm upset with her. Hey, you're not fulfilling your duty. Technically, it's not her responsibility. It's not an obligation that she has to cook. So she's cooking and she's cleaning. She's doing that, and out of her love for the family, out of her love for the maintaining the structure. And so as men, we should appreciate that. And we can appreciate it by helping them out. We can appreciate it also by, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to take you out to a nice dinner, or I'm going to do these type of things, these small tokens of appreciation. So it is very important within a family that a man, he does recognize this and he appreciates the work that women, they put into their home, taking care of the kids. Even when we have kids, a lot of times, the man, he helps out, but when the child gets hurt or something happens, immediately they run to their mother. And so when you look at that, you have to definitely appreciate and respect the women for all their hard work, and show them appreciation through helping out, taking them out, or whatever can be done. Yes. Well, yes. If we look at the lives of all of the imams, we find that sacred example of marriage, of respect and honor for the wives. We see that even for the role of women also within Islam. Quite often, even during the lifetime of the Prophet, just to show you, lifetime of the Prophet, sometimes some women, they would come to the Prophet and ask the Prophet questions. He'll say, go ask Fatima. He's giving her recognition that, look, she has knowledge. She is a person of great status, great knowledge. Even within the Rawayat, you'll find that there's a hadith where Imam Sadiq, alayhi wasallam, he narrates from his mother. He says, my mother told me. From my father, and so that by placing her in that chain of narrations, it is giving a great status even to his mother to show that, look, she's a person of great significance, that she is very learned, so therefore I narrate from her. Because when you think about it, here's the, at least within our beef, this is Imam al-Ma'asum. So if someone asks a question, and based on that obligation, he has a duty and responsibility from Allah to answer you. But he places her within that context of a hadith to show that, look, her knowledge is this. She should not be, as a woman, her status is elevated, that I'm narrating from her. And likewise, we see that in the history of a lot of the scholars, you found out that their wives were mushtahids, their daughters were mushtahidah, wives of mushtahidah, the daughters of mushtahidah. Like, for example, Kashif al-Khita. If you read the life of Kashif al-Khita, his wife was mushtahidah. His daughter was mushtahidah. Sometimes people will come and ask him questions, especially when he says, why don't you ask my wife? Or, hey, why don't you ask my daughter? Just to show that, look, they have a very high status. So definitely, we should honor it. So what is the, the rulings or the, what does Islam say about a woman marrying a married guy, meaning that she marries the guy as the second wife, and also marrying between the different madhahib, Sunni, Shia marriages. With regards to the first question that, a woman marrying a guy who is already married. Again, based on the laws of Islam, it is permissible. However, a person needs to, in the totality of the situation, it has to be observed whether it is something that's possible, that the guy is able to do that. Financially, emotionally, because there's the rights of the wife over the husband, and the rights of the husband over the wife. And in that situation, if he takes on a second wife, is he able to take care of that, take care of the wife financially, take care of the wife emotionally? Is it a situation where the, like getting married to a second wife, is going to destroy the first family? All of these things have to be taken into consideration. All these things have to be managed. But if you, again, sometimes we can act based purely on the legal aspect, the Sharia, that, okay, it says I can do this. But if we do only that and do not take the etiquettes of the law also into consideration, sometimes those situations can be more burdensome than they should be. So definitely, again, see what is halal, what is haram, but also take into consideration the etiquettes of the law and the circumstances of the people and the families who are involved. With regards to marrying between the madhahib Sunni and Shia, again, that is something that is permissible by the Islamic law, many of the mujtahideen, the marajah, they say yes, it's possible, it's fine. But again, of course, you know, there's also other etiquettes that come into consideration. With regards to how the children will be raised, as far as, you know, there may be a differences in the law at certain times, and which law will be observed. There's differences, slight differences in Hajj, sometimes even with eating halal, that whether you can just go to the grocery store and say Bismillah and eat anything from any grocery store, or no, the meat has to be properly slaughtered as the biha. So then all of these issues will kind of be confronted in the house, tangled in the house, and again, it could be something that's managed and worked out. Sometimes you find examples of that, and also it could be something that creates conflict and end up leading to divorce, and there's examples of that. So in either of those situations, not only should we understand the law that, okay, this thing is permissible or not permissible, but we should also take into consideration the etiquettes and the possible consequences of those actions, whether it's the issue of taking on a second wife or that type of things, or the issue of mirroring across the different madhahib, different denominations of Islam. So the question is a follow-up question to the first question about a husband who wants to take on a second wife, and he may not be giving any rational reason why he wants to take on a second wife. So what is the right of the first wife? And then there's a question about that if the wife can also request a divorce, or the whether she can just go ahead and take her mahar, the part that may have been deferred in the mahar, if it hasn't been given right away. Again, as I say, that in those type of situations, we should know that, okay, what is halal, what's haram, and also think about the totality of the situation as far as family matters are concerned. As far as the Sharia goes, you know, the man, he can take on a second wife, and the wife, the present wife, she is not able, like Shara'an, to deny him that right if it has not been stipulated within the marriage contract from before. And as far as her divorcing him simply based on that, that's not possible unless, again, within the marriage contract, she has the, you know, wakalat of divorce. She has the right to divorce. The husband has given up that right, to giving it to her, where she can divorce in any situation. So she wouldn't be able to get a divorce in that situation, unless, of course, again, based on the Sharia, you go through the other type of divorce, which is talaq al-khulu', for the woman, she requests a divorce and she gives up part of her right to her mehr, to her dowry, and it becomes a permanent divorce whereby they cannot ever marry again. So, you know, and then that goes also back with the mehr also, whether you know, she'll be able to get the mehr. If she has the right of divorce, absolute right of divorce, yes, she can divorce without it being a divorce of khulu, where she has to forfeit some of her dowry. And then by having that wakala of divorce, she can say, okay, well, I want to get divorced. And if there's anything that has been delayed in the dowry, she has full rights to that. So this is why, again, I state that, you know, in those type of situations, you know, all parties involved, they have to understand, okay, well, what is their rights? What rights does the Sharia give to them? And then also, what are the consequences of their actions? Because unfortunate thing would be that, okay, well, I'll just give a scenario. This may not be the case, but just to kind of show you the repercussions that can happen from this is that maybe there's a man and wife, and he decides, okay, I'm going to take on a second wife, and then the first wife, she gets upset, and she may not have the wakala of divorce, and she says, okay, well, just give me the khulu divorce. She forfeits her her dowry. She gets divorced from him, and she can't marry him again. Then she's like, oh, but I really love this guy. And okay, after some time, she gets over it. She can't marry him again. Or, you know, there's all kinds of complications, and especially also depending on where you're at. And many situations today that, especially like in, I guess in the West, there were just many situations, the wife, you know, the one who divorced, they often ask, okay, well, I want to have the kids with me. Sometimes the husband says, okay, take the kids. And the kids are with the woman, and she's divorced, and she may not, you know, sometimes they find difficulties. Unfortunately, I've seen situations like that, where women, she has children because she wants the child, or the children, and then she's left with the responsibility of taking care of the child, and the guy may not be living up to his responsibility and fulfilling his duty, but he's just, okay, well, that's a situation. She wanted it like that, and so now I'm just living my life with my new wife. So there's a lot of different problems that can arise from these situations, and you know, one must definitely you know, think about the consequences of his or her actions in the totality of it. Or like, say for example, the person could get divorced, and there are examples of that. The woman says, okay, I want a divorce. I have total right of divorce. She gets divorced, she goes about her way. She has her kids, she gets her mehr, and she's happy. She eventually gets remarried. Guy gets, you know, he has his wife, and they could be happy, or sometimes it could be sad. So there's so many repercussions to these actions, and that a person has to think out that, okay, well, what am I doing? What are going to be the consequences of my actions? Is it going to be something that's good for me and my family, or is it going to be something that's going to be bad for me and my family? It's going to be something that destroys my household, or is it going to be something that makes my household go forward? Sometimes your person could take on a second wife, and everything works out. You know, you never know. But there's so many different scenarios. So again, plan nadhmi amrikum, as Imam Ali says, and think about the consequences of your actions. Very good question. Some different implications there that, inshallah, that need to be explained. So the question is about, you know, what happens, or what is ruling about someone who, a guy who forces a woman into divorce after engagement. And actually, the idea of the engagement is that the aqd has been performed, the nikah has been read. So what is the situation of that if he runs away afterwards? First of all, just as a clarification, because sometimes it's an issue that's kind of misunderstood because of, I guess, cultural reasons and cultural ways of that marriages are taking place. Again, this is why it's important to understand what the Islamic law says about that. Now, once the Aqd al-Nikah is recited, that meaning the marriage is recited, I guess the sheikh or someone comes and he recites the formula, Zawajtu kama wakilati, and he performs that marriage ceremony. At that moment, that that marriage is performed, then it is an actual marriage. It's not an engagement that people are contemplating marriage. You are actually married. And at that point, all the rights of marriage become obligatory upon the husband with regards to the wife, and likewise, all the rights of the rights of the wife over the husband become obligatory, meaning that they must the man must maintain her, provide food, clothing, shelter for her. It's obligatory for him to do that. Likewise, it's obligatory upon the wife to observe the rights of the husband. Now, if both of them agree that, okay, well, we recite the act, we are actually married, but we decide that, okay, we're not going to live together for 1 year. We're going to wait until we have the wedding ceremony, the walima, and then live together afterwards. And that's fine, because they have agreed to overlook their rights that they have over one another. But but otherwise, they are actually married, and the law of marriage applies to both of them. So, but in a lot of the cultural, protocols of marriage, that quite often this marriage is performed, and then the spouse, the husband, wife, and also the parents, they consider, okay, well, you're not married, you're engaged. No, based on the Sharia, you're actually married. And so, and all those rights are applied. But in culture, it says, okay, no, you're not married until you do the walima. That's a cultural understanding of marriage. But based on the Sharia, you're absolutely married. All the obligations are there. So in that circumstances that that marriage has been performed and the guy runs away from his responsibility, then yes, there are means based on the Sharia that the woman can be divorced from the guy. There's different ways of doing it, but nonetheless, if she's divorced from him, depending again on what type of divorce took place, whether it was just a regular divorce, the raj'i divorce, one of the common divorce, then there are certain rules about the mahr, that what he should pay or doesn't have to pay. And I think it's perhaps half. I can check that and give you the correct answer. Or whether it's the khulu' divorce, where the woman says, okay, look, I don't want to be in this situation. I don't care what he's promised me as for a dowry. He can have it all, because he left and we never actually had the walima. We never lived together as husband and wife. So just to totally get out of the situation, she can do that too. So depending on what type of divorce it is, will determine that the what happens with the dowry. The permissibility of interacting between a girl and a boy who want to get married. It is permissible under Sharia that if and this is mentioned in Tawdhi' Masail, it's permissible that if the two want to get married, and with knowledge of this by the parents, especially like of the girl, if the girl is a virgin, going back to that issue, if she's not a virgin, then a whole other rules come in. But it is permissible for them to meet in public places, to meet in a public place, to talk in a public place. But that meeting or talking in a public place should not be such that either one of them becomes kind of aroused by each other, because in that situation it will be forbidden. Likewise, it is permissible that if there is true intentions to, on behalf of the man, to marry this the woman, that he can see her, like if she's like wears hijab, he can see her without hijab to kind of like finalize his decision. Yes, this is
one time.
Yeah, just one time. Yeah, exactly. Not always that, okay, I can see you every time. It is, and it comes at a point that he's still, okay, listen, I think I definitely want to do this. I want to go through with the marriage, and with the permission of the father, and he has that right that, okay, I just want to see her without her hijab, so make sure that, this is someone I also want to be with and spend my, inshallah, the rest of life with. that's allowed. Some individuals at times, I've seen this case also with regards to like the boy and girl who wants to get married, and it kind of prevents the situation which the sister asks about the, having to go through with the divorce. Because sometimes that is different. If the guy runs away, then okay, well, is it possible to contact the guy and have him to recite the divorce, or does it have to be a chulul divorce, or it has to be a divorce that the marja, he appoints someone to make the divorce? Because it becomes very complicated once that type of act has been performed. So some individuals at times, when the two are boy and girl are planning to get married, and there is and the two parents are, in a situation that their parents evolve, and the two parents kind of understand the sincerity of the two to get married, at times the zawaj al-muta has been used in order to create a situation of kind of this engagement. Because then, if it doesn't go through, then there's no need for divorce and making it very complicated. Okay, well, Here's the mahar, the muqaddim al-anqar, what happens to it? Is there a divorce of khulul? And the whole issue of the idda, those things are resolved with, as some individuals they've done, and I've seen it, and that it worked out, alhamdulillah, very good, where the parents were actually involved with how the whole zawaj al-muta, the temporary marriage, took form and took shape. Meaning that the parents sat down with the children, with the two individuals who wanted to get married, and they drafted a kind of a contract understanding, okay, well, this temporary marriage would be such that the two will be able to speak on the phone together and not have to worry about maybe getting aroused and it being haram, or they're able to meet one another out in public, and also some with chaperones, because sometimes they'll do it with being chaperoned. Not that, okay, well, you just go out by yourself, but they can go public places, meet one another, sometimes be taken by their parents to be chaperoned. And then also depending on the age of the, because sometimes people did it in various ways, but by doing that and sitting down, both the parents having that understanding of that temporary marriage, both the future husband and wife having understanding of how that temporary marriage is going to go, may go for a couple months. Okay, well, we do it for 3 months, and after 3 months, you see that this definitely you want to go through this, then make the aqd and do the permanent marriage and you move on. Some have done it for, okay, well, we'll do it for 1 month. After that 1 month, you've made the decision. Okay, now do the permanent marriage and begin to plan for the walima. Yeah, so it's been used in various ways, that temporary marriage. And without it, again, the scenario that I mentioned before, that they can talk to us or be in public as long as there's not any, they're not aroused by one another through talking, things like that. So. Any other questions, follow-up questions on that? So inshallah, we'll end here. With a loud salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.